This is cassette number 11.
General Myford looked down then and noticed Kara scowling up at him. Kara, are you all right? We thought you might be badly hurt.
No, she said, casting a cool glare at Verna and Kalin, each of whom used a hand to hold her shoulders down. She casually crossed her ankles. I just thought you could handle it, so I decided to take a nap.
General Myford gave her a quick smile, and then turned a serious face to Kalin.
It gets worse. This cavalry attack was a diversion. They hoped it might get you, I'm sure, but it was meant to make us believe it was just a raid.
Kalin felt her flesh go cold with dread.
They're coming, aren't they?
He nodded.
The entire force? They're still a distance out, but you're right, they're coming. This was just to throw us into confusion and keep us distracted.
Kalin stared, dumbfounded.
The Order had never attacked at sunset before. The prospect of the onslaught of hundreds of thousands upon hundreds of thousands of Imperial Order troops storming in from the darkness was blood-curdling.
"They've changed their tactics," Kalin whispered to herself.
"He's a quick study. I thought I'd tricked him, but I was the one who was taken in."
"What are you mumbling about?" Kara asked, her fingers locked together over his stomach.
"Jagang. He counted on me not being fooled by those troops going around in a circle. He wanted me to think I had outsmarted him. He played me for a fool."
Kara made a face.
"What?"
Kalin felt sick at the implications. She pressed the hand to her forehead as the awful truth inundated her.
"Jagang wanted me to think I had his scheme figured out, so we would pretend to play along and send out our troops. He probably figured they wouldn't be sent in after his decoy, but would be used instead against his real plan of attack. He didn't care about that, though. All along he was planning on changing his tactics. He was waiting only until those troops left so that he could attack before they were in place and while our numbers were reduced."
"You mean," Kara asked,
"that whole time you were talking to him, pretending to believe he was moving troops north, he knew you were pretending?"
"I'm afraid so. He outsmarted me."
"Maybe, maybe not," General Myford said. "He hasn't succeeded yet. We don't have to let him have it his way. We can move our forces before he can pounce."
"Can't we call back the men we sent out?" Verna asked. "Their numbers would help."
"They're hours away," General Myford said. "Traveling through backcountry on the way to their assigned locations, they would never get back here in time to help us tonight."
Rather than dwell on how gullible she'd been, Kalin put her mind to the immediate problem.
"We need to move fast."
The general nodded his agreement.
"We could fall back on our other plans about breaking up and scattering into the mountains."
He ran his fingers back through his blonde hair. The gesture of frustration unexpectedly reminded Kalin of Richard.
"But if we do that, we would have to abandon most of our supplies. In winter, without supplies, a number of our men wouldn't last long. Either way, killed in battle or dying of hunger and cold, you're just as dead."
"Broken up like that, we would be easy pickings," Kalin agreed. "That's a last resort. It may work later, but not now. For now, we need to keep the army together if we're to survive the winter, and if we're to keep the Order distracted from its designs at conquest.
We dare not allow them to go uncontested into a city. It would not only be a bloodbath, but if they picked the right city, we would face a near impossible task of dislodging them."
The general shook his head.
"It could end up being the end of our hopes of driving them back to the old world."
Kalin gestured over her shoulder.
"What about that valley we talked about back there? The high pass is narrow. It can be defended on this side by two men and a dog, if need be."
"That's what I was thinking," he said. "It keeps the army together and keeps the Order having to contend with us rather than being able to turn their attention on any cities. If they try to move around us up into the Midlands, there are easy northern routes out of the valley from which we can strike.
We have more men on the way, and we can send for others. We need to stay together and maintain our engagement with the Order's army until those forces arrive.
Then what are we waiting for? Verna asked. Let's get moving.
He gave her a worried look. The problem right now is that if we're going to make it into that valley before the Order can pounce on us, we're going to need more time to do it. The pass is too narrow for wagons. The horses can make it, but not the wagons. They'll have to be dismantled. Most of our equipment is designed to be knocked down so the parts can be portaged if need be. We'll have to leave a few that aren't. It won't take long to get started, but we're going to need time to funnel all the men and supplies over that narrow pass, especially in the dark.
Torches will work well enough with a steady line of men, Addie said. They must only follow the one in front. Even if the light be bad, they can do it.
Galen remembered the handprint made of glowing dust. The gifted could lay down a glowing track to guide the men.
That would help, the general said.
We're still left with our basic problem, though. While our men are trying to break down and move all our equipment and supplies, and waiting their turn to go over the pass, the Order will arrive. We'll find ourselves in a pitched battle trying to defend ourselves while withdrawing at the same time. A withdrawal requires the ability to move faster than the enemy, or at least keep him at bay while pulling back. The pass doesn't provide that.
We've kept ahead of them before, Verna said. This isn't the first attack.
You're correct, he pointed to his left. We could try to withdraw up this valley instead, but in the dark and with the Order attacking, I think that would be a mistake. Darkness is the problem this time. They're going to keep coming. In daylight, we could establish defenses and hold them off. Not at night.
We already have defenses set up here, Kara said. We could stand where we are and fight them head on.
General Myford chewed his lower lip.
That was my first thought, Kara, and still an option. But I don't like our chances in a head-on direct confrontation like this, not at night when they can sneak great numbers of men in close. We couldn't use our archers to advantage in the dark. We can't see their numbers or movements accurately, so we wouldn't be able to position our men properly. It's a problem of numbers. Theirs are almost unlimited. Ours aren't.
We don't have enough gifted to cover every possibility, and in war it's always what you don't cover that gets hit. The enemy could pour through a gap, get in behind us in the dark, without us even realizing it, and then we're finished.
Everyone was silent as the implications truly sank in.
I agree, Galen said. The pass is the only chance we have to keep from losing a major battle tonight, along with a huge number of our men. The risk without real benefit of standing and fighting is a poor choice.
The general appraised her eyes.
That still leaves us with the problem of how we're going to get over that pass before they annihilate us.
Galen turned to Verna.
We need you to slow the enemy down, to give us the time we need to get our army over that pass.
What do you wish me to do?
Use your special glass.
The general screwed up his face.
Or what?
A weapon of magic, Kara said, to blind the enemy troops.
Verna looked thunderstruck.
But I'm not ready. We only made up a small batch. I'm not ready.
Galen turned back to the general.
What did the scouts say about how much time we have until the Order is upon us?
The Order could be here within an hour at the soonest, two at the latest. If we don't slow them down, we'll never make it out of this valley with our men and supplies. If we can't find a way to delay them, we can only run for the hills or stand and fight. Neither is a choice I would make except in desperation.
If we just run for the hills, Addie said, we'd be as good as dead. Together we be alive, and at least be a threat to the enemy. If we scatter, the Order will take the opportunity to attack and capture cities. If our only choice is to scatter or stand our ground and fight, then we can only choose to stand and fight. Better to try than to die one at a time out in the mountains.
Galen rubbed her fingers across her brow as she tried to think.
Jagang had changed his tactics and decided to engage them in a night battle. He had never done that before because it would be so costly for him. but with his numbers. He apparently wasn't concerned about that. Chigang held life in little regard.
"If we have to fight him in a full battle, here, now," Kalin said in resignation, "we will probably lose the war by dawn."
"I agree," the general finally said.
"As far as I see it, we have no choice. We have to act quickly and get as many of our men over the pass as we can. We'll lose all those who don't get over before the order arrives, but we'll manage to preserve some."
The four of them were silent a moment, each considering the horror of that reality, of who would remain behind to die. Furious activity continued around them. Men were rushing around, putting out fires, collecting panicked horses, tending to wounded, and battling the few remaining invaders they had trapped. The Order soldiers were greatly outnumbered. Not for long, though. Kalin's mind raced. She couldn't help being furious with herself at being gulled. Richard's words echoed through her mind. Think of the solution, not the problem. The solution was the only thing that mattered now. Kalin looked again to Verna.
"We have an hour before they're upon us. You have to try, Verna. Do you think you have any chance at making your special glass and then deploying it before the enemy is upon us?"
"I will do my best. You have my word on that. I wish I could promise more."
Verna scrambled to her feet. "I'll need the sisters who are tending the wounded, of course. What about the ones working at the front lines? The ones countering enemy magic, can I have any of them?"
"Take them all," Kalin said. "If this doesn't work, nothing else is going to matter."
"I'll take them all, then. Every one," Verna said. "It's the only chance we have."
"You'll get started," Addie told Verna. "Go down near the front lines on this side of the valley, where you will be upwind from the attack. I will begin collecting the sisters and get them down there to help you."
"We need glass," Verna said to the general. "Any kind. At least a few barrels full.
I'll have men down there with the first barrel right away. Can we at least help to break it up for you?"
"No, it won't matter if what you throw in the barrels breaks, but beyond that it must be done by the gifted. Just bring whatever glass you can collect. That will be all you can do."
The general promised her he would see to it. Holding her hem up out of her way, Verna ran off to the task. Addie was close on her heels.
"I'll get the men moving now," the general told Kalin as he scrambled to his feet. "The scouts can mark the trail, then we can start moving the heavier supplies first."
If it worked, they would slip out of Jagang's grasp. Kalin knew that if Verna failed, they could all very well lose their lives and the war by morning. General Myford paused with one last hesitant look, one last chance for her to change her mind.
"Do it,"
she said to the general. "Kara, we have work." Chapter 38 Kalin pulled her horse up short. She felt the heat of blood rushing to her face.
"What are you doing?" Kara asked as Kalin threw her leg over the horse's neck and leaped to the ground.
The moon lit a layer of lacy clouds scudding past, giving a faint, serene illumination to the surrounding countryside. The thin layer of snow gathered the muted light of the moon to make it more luminous than it otherwise would be. Kalin pointed in the direction of the small figure she could just make out in the dim light. The skinny girl, surely not much past 10 years, was standing at a barrel, ramming a metal rod down inside to smash the glass in the bottom. Kalin handed the reins to Kara as soon as she had dismounted. Kalin stalked over to the sisters working on the snowy ground. Running off in a haphazard line to keep the wind at their backs were over 100 of the women, all focused intently on the work before them. Many had their cloaks tented around themselves and their work. Not far down that line, Kalin bent, put a hand under the prelate's arm, and lifted her to her feet. Mindful of the serious nature of the work going on, Kalin at least kept her voice quiet, since she wasn't able to make it congenial.
"Verna, what is Holly doing down here?"
Verna glanced over the heads of a dozen intervening sisters kneeling before a long board, breeze at their backs, carefully grinding glass chips with pestles and mortars. There being not nearly enough pestles and mortars, many of the women to the other side were using dished rocks and round stones to carefully crunch the glass chips. The concentration showed on each woman's face.
The accident that had blinded his sister had happened when the wind had changed, and a gust had blown her work back up in her face. The same thing could happen again at any time, although as darkness had settled in, the wind had at least died down to a steady breeze. Holly was bundled in an oversized cloak. She had a determined grimace as she lifted the rod and then let it drop down in the barrel set away from the sister's dangerous work. Kaylin saw that the rod had a faint greenish glow to it.
"She's helping, Mother Confessor. She's a child."
Verna pointed off into the darkness to what Kaylin hadn't seen.
"So are Helen and Valerie."
Kaylin pinched the bridge of her nose between her first finger and thumb and took a purging breath.
"What madness would possess you to have children down here near the front, helping to blind people?"
Verna glanced at the women working nearby. She took Kaylin's arm by the elbow and led her out of earshot of the others. Alone, where they were less likely to be heard, she folded her hands before herself as she assumed the stern visage that came so naturally to her.
"Kaylin, Holly may be a child, but she is a gifted child, and she is far from stupid besides. That goes for Helen and Valerie as well. Holly has seen more in her young life than any child should see. She knows what's going on tonight with that attack, and with the attack that's coming. She was terrified. All the children were. So you bring her to the front, to the greatest danger." "What would you have me do? Send her back somewhere to be watched over by soldiers? Do you wish me to force her to be alone at a time like this, so she could only tremble in terror? But this is... She's gifted. Despite how horrific it seems, this is better for her, as it is for the others. She's with the sisters who understand her and her ability, as other people can't. Don't you recall the comfort you derive from being with older confessors who knew the way you felt about things?"
Kaylin did, but said nothing.
"The sisters are the only family she and the other novices have now. Holly is not alone and afraid. She may still be afraid, but she's doing something to help us, so that her fear is channeled into something that will assist in overcoming the cause of her fear."
Kaylin's brow was still set in a glare.
"Verna, she's a child. And you had to kill a child today. I understand. But don't let that terrible event make it harder on Holly. Yes, this is an awful thing she is helping to do, but this is the reality of the way things are. She could die tonight, along with the rest of us. Can you even imagine what those brutes would do to her first? At least that much is beyond the imagination of her young mind. What she can comprehend, though, is fear enough. If she wanted to hide somewhere, I would have let her, but she has a right, if she so chooses, to contribute to saving herself. She is gifted, and can use her power to do the simple part of what needs doing. She begged me to give her the chance to help."
In anguish, Kaylin gathered her fur mantle at her throat as she glanced back over her shoulder at the little girl using both her spindly arms to lift the heavy steel rod and drop it again to break the glass in the bottom of the barrel. Holly's features were drawn tight as she concentrated on using her gift, while at the same time lifting the weight of the rod.
"Dear spirits," Kaylin whispered to herself, "this is madness."
Kara impatiently shifted her weight to her other foot. It wasn't indifference to the situation, but a matter of priorities. Madness or not, there was little time left, and as Verna said, they could all die before the night was finished. As cruel as it sounded, there were more important matters than the life of one child. Or, for that matter, three.
"How is the work going? Are you going to be ready?"
Verna's bold expression finally faltered.
"I don't know."
She lifted a hand hesitantly, motioning out over the dark valley before them.
"The wind is right, but the valley approach to our forces is quite broad. It's not that we won't have some, it's that we need to have enough so that when the enemy gets close, we can release the glass dust to float across the span of the entire field of battle."
"But you have some. Surely what you have will do damage to the enemy."
"If there isn't enough, then they may skirt it, or it may not be concentrated enough to do the damage necessary to bring their forces to a halt. Their attack will not be turned back by a small number of casualties,
Verna squeezed one fist in her other hand. "If the Creator will just slow the Imperial Order enough to grant us another hour, at the least, then I believe we may have enough."
Kaelin wiped a hand across her face. That was asking a lot. But with the darkness, she thought that it just might be possible that the Order would have to go slow enough to give Verna and her sisters the time they needed.
"And you're sure we can't help? There's nothing any but the gifted can do to assist you?"
Verna's mask of authority again emerged in the moonlight.
"Well, yes, there is one thing."
"What is it, then?"
"You could leave me alone so I can work."
Kaelin sighed. "Just promise me one thing." Verna raised an eyebrow as if willing to listen prudently. "When the attack comes and you have to use this special glass, get the children out of here first. Get them to the rear, where they can be taken over the pass to safety."
Verna smiled with relief.
"We are of like minds in that, Mother Confessor."
As Verna hurried back to her work, Kaelin and Kara returned along the line of sisters, past the end to where Holly was preparing glass to supply those gifted women. Kaelin couldn't help but to stop for a word.
"Holly, how are you getting along?"
When the girl rested the rod against the side of the barrel, Kara, absent any fondness for magic, aimed a suspicious frown at the faintly glowing metal. As Holly took her small hands from the metal, the greenish glow faded, as if a magical wick had been turned down.
"I'm fine, Mother Confessor, except I'm cold. I'm getting terribly tired of being cold."
Kaelin smiled warmly as she ran a gentle hand down the back of Holly's fine hair.
"As are we all."
Kaelin crouched down beside the girl.
"When we get over into another valley, you can get warm by a nice fire."
"That would be splendid."
She cast a furtive glance at her steel rod. "I have to get back to work, Mother Confessor."
Kaelin couldn't resist pulling the girl close and kissing her frigid cheek. Hesitant at first, the thin little arms surrendered to desperately encircle Kaelin's neck.
"I'm so scared," Holly whispered.
"Me too,"
Kaelin whispered back as she squeezed the girl tight.
"Me too."
Holly straightened.
"Really? You get scared too? That those awful men will murder us?"
Kaelin nodded.
"I get frightened. But I know we have a lot of good people who will keep us safe. Like you, they work as hard as they can so that we can all someday be safe and not have to be scared anymore."
The girl stuck her hands under her cloak to warm them. Her gaze sank to the ground at her feet.
"I miss Anne, too."
She looked up again.
"Is Anne safe?"
Kaelin groped for words of comfort.
"I saw Anne not long ago, and she was fine. I don't think you need to worry for her."
"She saved me. I love her and miss her so. Will she be with us soon?"
Kaelin cupped the girl's cheek.
"I don't know, Holly. She had important business she was taking care of. I'm sure, though, that we'll see her again."
Pleased with that news and seemingly relieved to know that she was not alone in her fears, Holly turned back to her work with renewed determination. As Kaelin and Kara collected their horses, they heard a horse approaching at a gallop. Before she recognized the rider, Kaelin saw and recognized the black splotch on its rump. When he saw her waving, Zed trotted Spider around to her. He slid down off the animal's bare back.
"They're coming!"
the wizard announced without preamble. Verna rushed up, having seen Zed ride in.
"It's too soon. They weren't supposed to be here this soon."
He gaped at her in astonishment.
"Beggs, woman! Shall I tell them that it would be rather inconvenient for them to attack right now than to please come back to kill us later?"
"You'd know what I mean," she snapped. "We don't have enough yet."
"How long till they get here?" Kaelin asked.
10 minutes.
That thin sliver of time was the only bulwark between them and catastrophe. Kaelin felt as if her heart rose into her throat, recalling suddenly the forsaken feeling of being mobbed and beaten to death. Verna sputtered in wordless frustration, anger, and dread.
"Do you have any ready?"
Zed asked as calmly as if he were inquiring about dinner.
"Yes, of course," she said. "But if they will be here that soon, we've not enough.
Dear Creator, we don't have nearly what we'll need in order to drift it out all across the front. Too little is as good as none.
We've no choice now.
Zed gazed off into the darkness, perhaps seeing what only a wizard could see. His jaw was set in bitter disappointment. He spoke in a disembodied voice, a man going through the motions when he knew he had come to the end of his options, perhaps even his faith.
Start releasing what you have. We'll just have to hope for the best. I have messengers with me. I'll send word of the situation back to General Myford. He will need to know.
To see Zed seemingly relinquish hope cast their fate in the most frightening light possible. Zed was always the one who kept them focused and gave them courage, conviction, and confidence. He gathered up Spider's reins in one hand and gripped her mane with the other. Wait, Kaelin said. He paused and looked back at her. His eyes were a window into an inner weariness. She couldn't imagine all the struggles he had faced in his life, or even in the last few weeks. Kaelin ran through seemingly a thousand thoughts as she searched frantically for some way of turning away their grim fate. Kaelin couldn't let Zed down. He had so often carried them. Now he needed another shoulder to help endure the weight. She presented him a look of fierce determination before she turned to the prelate.
Verna, what if we didn't release it in the way we planned? What if we didn't simply let it drift out, hoping for the breeze to carry it where we need it?
Verna opened her hands in a bewildered gesture.
What do you mean? Won't it take more of the glass, the amount you say you need, simply so that there is enough to let it drift all the way across the valley, and yet have enough to hang in the air, too? Well, yes, of course, but what if, Kaelin asked, we released it in a line along the face of the front, right where it was needed? Then it would take less, wouldn't it? Well, I suppose, Verna threw up her hands, but I told you, we can't use magic to help us, or they will detect our conjuring, and then they will shield for the glass as fast as we release it. It will be useless. Better to release what we have and hope for the best.
Kaelin glanced out over the empty plain, faintly lit by the placid clouds veiling the moon. There was nothing to be seen out in the valley. Soon there would be. Soon the virgin snow would be trampled by the boots of over a million men. Only the sound of glass being crushed on stone and the thump of the steel rods in the barrels disturbed the quiet darkness. Soon blood-curdling battle cries would inundate the hush of the night. Kaelin felt the suffocating dread she had felt when she first realized that all those men had caught her alone. She felt the anger, too.
"Collect what you've made so far," she said.
"Let me have it." They all stared at her. Zed's brow drew together in a wrinkled knot.
"Just what are you thinking?"
Kaelin pulled her hair back from her face as she rapidly pieced together her plan, so that it was whole in her own mind first.
"The enemy is attacking into the wind, not directly, but close enough for our purpose. I'm thinking that if I ride along the front of our line, right in front of the advancing enemy troops, and I release the glass dust, letting it dribble out as I go, then it will flow out in the wind behind me, right into the faces of the enemy. Delivering it right where it's needed, it won't take as much as it would were we to let it drift out from here, hoping to spread it all across the valley." She looked from one startled face to another.
"You see what I'm saying? Closer to the enemy, wouldn't it take much less to do the job?"
"Dear Creator," Verna protested, "do you have any idea how dangerous that would be?"
"Yes," Kaelin answered in grim resolve. "A lot less dangerous than facing a direct attack by their entire force. Now, would that work? Wouldn't it take considerably less if I were to ride along the front, trickling it out as I went, than letting it drift out to them from here?"
"Well, we're running out of time." "You're right. It wouldn't take nearly as much."
Verna touched her lip as she stared off into the darkness while considering.
"It's better than the way we were going to do it. That much is sure."
Kaelin started pushing her.
"Get it together. Now, hurry."
Verna abandoned her protests and ran off to collect what they had. Kara was about to unleash a tirade of objections when Zed lifted a hand as if to ask she let him do the objecting instead.
"Kalen, it sounds like you might have something here, but someone else can do this. It's foolish to risk."
"I'll be needing a diversion," she said, cutting him off. "Something to distract their attention. I'll be riding by in the dark, so they probably won't notice me. But it would be best if there were something to occupy their attention, just in case, something to make them look elsewhere for the last time."
"As I was saying, someone else can—"
"No," she said in quiet finality. "I'll not ask someone else to do this. It was my idea. I'm doing it. I won't allow someone to take my place." Kalen deemed herself responsible for the peril they were in. It was she who had blundered and fallen for Jagang's trick. It was she who had come up with the plan and ordered the troops out. It was she who made Jagang's night attack possible. Kalen knew all too well the terror everyone felt, waiting for the attack. She felt it herself. She thought of Holly, fearful of being murdered by the marauding beasts coming out of the night for her. The fear was all too real. It would be Kalen who had lost the war for them this very night if they didn't get their army back across that pass to safety. "I'm doing this myself," she repeated. "That's the way it's going to be. Standing here arguing about it can only cost us our chance. Now, I need a diversion, and I need one quickly." Zed let out an angry breath. The fire was back in his eyes. He flicked out his hand, pointing.
"Oren is back there waiting for me. The two of us will move to separate locations and give you your diversion."
"What will you do?" At last Zed surrendered to a grim, cunning grin.
"Nothing fancy this time. No clever, devious tricks like they no doubt expect. This time we'll give them a good old-fashioned firefight."
Kalen gave a sharp tug to the strap at her ribs, holding her leather armor on her shoulders, chest, and back, cinching it down tight. She nodded once to seal the pact. "Wizard's fire it is, then."
"Keep an eye to your right, to our side as you ride. I don't want you to get in the way of what I mean for the enemy. You must also watch for what their gifted send back at me."
As she secured her cloak, she nodded assent to Zed's brief instructions. She checked the straps on her leg armor, making sure they were tight, remembering how the enemy's strong fingers had clawed at her legs trying to unhorse her. Verna came rushing back, a big bucket at the end of each arm pulled down straight by the weight. Some of the sisters were scurrying along beside her.
"All right," the winded prelate said. "Let's go."
Kalen reached for the buckets. "I'll take—"
Verna yanked them back. "How do you propose to ride and sprinkle this out? It's too much. Besides, you don't know its properties."
"Verna, I'm not letting you—"
"Stop acting like an obstinate child. Let's go."
Kara snatched one of the buckets.
"Verna is right, Mother Confessor. You can't hold onto your horse, release the glass dust, and carry both buckets all the same time. You two take that one. I'll take this one."
The willowy sister Philippa rushed to Kara's side and lifted the bucket.
"Mistress Kara is right, prelate. You and the Mother Confessor can't do both buckets. You two take one. Mistress Kara and I will take the other."
There was no time to argue with the three determined women. Kalen knew that no one would be able to talk her out of what she had to do, and they probably felt the same. Besides, they had a valid point.
"All right," Kalen said as she pulled on her gloves.
She lashed tight the fur mantle she wore over the top of the wool cloak. She didn't want anything flapping in the wind. The hilt of her sword was covered, but she figured she wouldn't be needing it. The hilt of Richard's sword stuck up behind her shoulder, her ever-present reminder of him, as if she needed one. She quickly tied her hair back with a leather thong. Verna tossed a handful of the fluffy snow, checking the wind. It had held its direction and was light but steady. At least that much was in their favor.
"You two go first," Kalen said to Kara. "Verna and I will wait maybe 5 minutes to let what you release drift in toward the enemy so that we won't ride through it. Then we'll follow you across the valley.
That way we'll be sure to overlap what you release with ours so as not to have any gaps. We need to make sure there's no safe place for the order to get through. We need the ruin and panic to be as uniform and widespread as possible." Sister Philippa, noting what Kaelin had done, fastened her cloak securely at her neck and waist. "That makes sense." "It would be more effective double like that," Verna agreed.
"I guess there's no time to argue this foolishness,"
Zed grumbled as he seized Spider's mane and pulled himself up, laying across the horse's back on his belly. He swung a leg over Spider's rump and sat up.
"Let me have a minute or two to get ahead of you and let Warren know. Then we'll start showing the Imperial Order some real wizard work."
He pulled his horse around and smiled. It was heartening to see it again.
"After all this work, someone had better have some dinner waiting for me on the other side of that pass back there."
"If I have to cook it for you myself," Kaelin promised. The wizard gave them a jaunty wave and galloped off into the darkness. Chapter 39 Kaelin stuffed a boot in the stirrup, grabbed the saddle horn, and sprang up into her seat. The cold leather creaked as she leaned over and held a hand down in order to help Verna up. Once the prelate squirmed in close behind Kaelin, two sisters carefully handed the heavy wooden bucket up to her. Kara and Sister Philippa were on their horse and ready, the sister balancing her bucket on her thigh. "Get the children back across the pass," Verna ordered. Sister Dulcinea bobbed her head of gray hair.
"I will see to it, prelate."
"Whatever more of the glass you can have ready by the time Mother Confessor and I ride out, you should release into the wind for good measure. Then get yourselves spread out behind our lines to help if the order breaks through. If we fail, the sisters must do their best to hold the enemy off while as many as possible make it across the pass to safety." Sister Dulcinea again promised to carry out the prelate's orders. They all waited a few minutes in silence, while giving Zed the head start he needed to reach Warren with instructions. There seemed nothing else to say. Kaelin concentrated on what she had to do, rather than worrying whether or not it would work. In the back of her mind, though, she was aware of how notoriously imperfect were such last-minute battle plans. Judging that they had waited as long as they dared, Kaelin motioned with her arm, signaling Kara to start out. The two of them shared a last look. Kara offered a brief smile, "Good luck," then raced away. Sister Philippa, holding tight to the moored Sith's waist with one arm and balancing the bucket on her thigh with the help of her other hand. As the sound of hoofbeats from Kara's horse faded into the night, Kaelin for the first time realized that, in the distance, she could hear the collective yells of hundreds of thousands of Imperial Order troops. The countless voices fused into one continuous roar as their attack drew ever closer. It almost sounded like the moan of an ill wind through a canyon's rocky fangs. Her horse snorted and pawed the frozen ground. The awful drone made Kaelin's pulse race even faster. She wanted to race away before the men got too close. But she had to wait, to give the glass dust Kara and Sister Philippa released time to drift out of the way. "I wish we could use magic to protect ourselves," Verna said in a quiet voice, almost as if in answer to what Kaelin was thinking. "We can't, of course, or they would detect it." Kaelin nodded, hardly hearing the woman. Verna was just saying anything that came to mind so as not to have to sit and listen to the enemy coming for them. The bitter cold long forgotten, her heartbeat throbbing in her ears, Kaelin sat still as death, staring out into the empty night, trying to envision every aspect of the task at hand, trying to go through it all in her mind first, so she wouldn't be surprised by anything that might happen, and then have to decide what to do. Better to anticipate, if you could, than to react. As she quietly sat her horse, she let her anger build too. Anger made a better warrior than fear. Kaelin fed that anger with images of all the terrible things she had seen the Imperial Order do the people of the Midlands. She let the memories of all the bodies she had seen pass through her mind as if they came before the Mother Confessor to plead with stilled tongues for vengeance. She remembered the women she had seen wailing over murdered children.
husbands, sisters, brothers, mothers, and fathers. She remembered strong men in helpless anguish over the senseless slaughter of their friends and loved ones in her mind's eye. She saw those men, women, and children suffering at the hands of a people to whom they had done no harm. The Imperial Order was but a gang of killers without empathy. They merited no pity. They would get none. She thought about Richard in the hands of that enemy. She savored her promise to kill every one of them if she had to, until she got Richard back. "It's time," Caelan said through gritted teeth. Without looking back over her shoulder, she asked, "Are you ready?"
"Ready? Don't slow for anything, or we will end up its victims, too. Our only chance is to keep fresh air streaming over us, to carry the glass dust all away from our bodies. When we get to the opposite side, after I've dumped it all, then we'll be safe. By that time, the Order should be in a state of mass confusion, if not complete panic."
Caelan nodded.
"Hold tight. Here we go."
The horse, already in an excited state, probably from the approaching cries, sprang away too fast, nearly dumping Verna off the back. Her arm jerked tight around Kalen's middle. At the same time, Caelan reached back and caught Verna's sleeve, holding her arm. As they raced away and Verna fought to regain her balance, the bucket lurched, but Verna was able to steady it. Fortunately, it didn't spill. Even as the muscular gelding was obeying her command and racing away, his ears were turned to the approaching clamor. He was skittish, carrying the unfamiliar burden of two riders. He was well-trained and had seen battle often enough, so he probably was also edgy because he knew what the war cries signified. Caelan knew he was strong and quick. For what she had to do, speed was life. Caelan's heart galloped as fast as the horse as they thundered through the blackness of the valley. The enemy was much closer now than they had been when Kara passed through not long before. The horse's hoofbeats partly drowned out the battle cries of countless enemy soldiers to their left. Terrifying bits of memories of fists and boots flashed unbidden into her mind as she heard men coming toward her in the dark, screaming for blood. She felt her vulnerability as never before. Caelan turned those memories from fear to anger at the outrage of these brutes coming into her Midlands and murdering her people. She wanted every one of them to suffer, and every one of them did. There was no telling precisely how far the enemy had already advanced, or, with the moonlight behind her, even her own exact direction. Caelan worried that she might have sliced it too close to the bone, and that they could unexpectedly encounter a wall of bloodthirsty men. She wanted to be close, though, to deliver the blinding dust right in their faces, to be sure it had the best chance to work, to turn back the attack. She resisted the urge to guide her horse to the right, away from the enemy. The night suddenly ignited with harsh yellow light. The clouds went from gray to bright yellow-orange. White snow blazed with garish color. An awful droning sound vibrated deep under her ribs. 100 feet in front of her and maybe 10 feet above the ground, tumbling liquid yellow and blue light roared headlong across her route, dripping honeyed fire, trailing billowing black smoke. The seething sphere of wizard's fire vividly illuminated the ground beneath it as it shot past. Even though not directed at her, the sound alone was enough to make Caelan ache to cringe away in dread.
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.